Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Long Island's number one pro wrestling broadcast, Monty Nefaro, only seen here out of Indie Music TV. Abe, in the house.
What's going on, brother?
It's warm. It's warm. In the studio.
Yes, let's go. I'm ready to focus today.
We're ready to focus. Last week we had Missy Beefcake, 9 o'clock, the return of Jimmy Farrow, but more importantly, we've got the iconic pro wrestling legend, Mr. Wild Bill Irwin. Bill, thank you for gracing us with your presence, sir.
Well, you're welcome. All those fancy, nice names. I've never been called so many nice names. Usually I get called worse names than that.
Well, you know what? Me too. And probably from my wife. And that's the worst part of it. So
yeah.
She was just yelling at me in the house because on a weekend I was mopping the floors. And we have wood floors. And I guess I left a wet mop on the floor. I forgot to put it in a bucket, and it stained the floor. And I just caught holy hell for it.
Yeah, it'll warp the floor, won't it?
Yeah, whatever. You know, now you're piling on. Now she'll be watching. It's just saying, even Bill Irwin thinks you're an idiot.
Yeah. Well,
so, Bill, you're still in Minnesota. We were talking, or Minneapolis, I'm sorry. You still enjoy Minneapolis?
Yeah, I'm getting to the point where the weather is becoming more of a pain in the ass than a good time. Although my son is a big snowmobiler and that kind of stuff, and you know, when we moved home, he played hockey and all of that good stuff, and went to college, and now he's a big snowmobiler. And my wife and I are kind of like, well, what are we doing here? It's 30 below, for God. I don't get out. But, you know, talk is cheap, and we just we threaten to leave every winter, and we never do.
We're leaving here, I promise you. I mean, don't you, like, miss the beach and the weather and, you know?
Yes, I do. I miss I actually seriously, the day we left Texas, I lived just north of Denton, Texas, which is just north of Fort Worth and Dallas. It was 117 degrees.
Jeez.
And you know, up here it'll get down to 50 below and stuff, but I still think, God, I'd love to go back to that 117 degrees.
You know what? I think I have to agree with you. I'd rather go with the 150 below. What does 50 below feel like?
Well, you know the trick where you take a glass of water and throw it in the air and it freezes?
That's it.
We
do. Wow.
That's every day up here.
No thanks. No thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Bill. We had last year we had what? I don't know. What was it? 120 inches of snow in Duluth? We had a lot of snow last year. This year, the snow level is not—it's not real deep. The snowmobiling here is not such a big thing because there's not enough snow. But you know,
well, what about like snow blowing your driveway and stuff? What do you got? Some kind of giant tractor doing it? I mean, you know,
my driveway is 120 feet from the garage door to the road. And it's, I don't know, 20, it's a two-lane blacktop, right?
Right.
Two cars go down it. And, yeah, we'd get a foot, 13, 14 inches of snow, and you're out there for a couple hours just back up and down, blowing the snow. And then by the time you get done, you got to almost start over because it's still snowing. But if you don't do it while it's snowing, it'll be too much. So, yeah.
So what is it like? What's it like in your house? Like when it's about to snow and you know the snow's coming, you must be miserable. Like over here, when I know snow's coming, I know what the morning's going to bring, and it's not near what you guys are dealing with. But I'm all pissed off that night. I'm all ready to be mad.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, it's coming. So what are you going to do? Just make sure the snow blower is working. That's the trick. Because if you go out there and it won't run, you're not going anywhere. And sometimes you're not going anywhere anyway. So, the plows, all the streets will get plowed. You know, like the city and the counties are pretty good at plowing the roads and keeping them plowed and sanding and putting salt down, that kind of stuff. Although it's still tricky to drive in, you'll be okay. But, you know, you got to get out of your driveway and, you know, when you get 6 or 8 inches, well, that's pretty good. But when it hits at 12 to 14 inches, you know, then you're kind of really, your snowblower might take a great big bite on 6 inches, but on 14 inches, it takes the itty bitty little bite like that. So how many runs up and down do you got to take to get that much over all the time? It takes several hours of walking back and forth. So.
You got to appease me on this one because now I have the opportunity. I'm assuming you saw the movie Fargo.
I believe so. Yeah.
So it's like based on like a police force in Minnesota, and I guess they go over to like Are the people really like that up there? Is it that way?
It can be, yes. I mean, obviously, probably for, you know, movie, they take a little bit of, what do you call it? Liberals or
a little liberty on it.
They take some liberty with the characters, but there's a certain amount, that are out there. They're pretty much characters just like that. Yeah.
Do they have like special, is it true? Like they have special seal coats for the cars for Minnesota? Or Minneapolis to protect the car.
Well, you can get your car seal coated and underneath with it's a rust prohibitive stuff. You know, as far as rust prohibiting over the paint, well, you know, you can, but most of the rust prohibitive stuff is a dark color tar stuff. You know, so you really. Not the bodies of the cars. Usually if you're putting some type of rust inhibitor on it, you're blowing it up underneath them, up on the frame and up in the wheel wells and that kind of stuff.
Because all right, well, I don't want to beat up on Minnesota that bad, even though I hate the Vikings. But I'm a Jet fan, so I have it worse than you. So we can't even talk about it.
The Vikings. Well, you know, one year you love them, the next year you hate them. So
at least you make the playoffs. My team hasn't made the playoffs in 25 years or whatever it is.
Yeah, it has been a while, hasn't it?
A little bit. Yeah. If my partner was here, he'd be screaming to you, crying about it. all right, so before we get into it, Bill, you mind going over a couple of news items with me, and maybe if you want to comment, or if you don't want to comment, all good there.
No. Yeah. All right, I might have to use a no comment once in a while, but I don't know. Go ahead.
We'll try. We'll open up with a little more difficult one. 64,000 women and girls became pregnant due to rape in states with abortion bans, study estimates. More than 64,000 women and girls became pregnant because of rape in states that implemented abortion bans after Roe v. Wade was overruled, according to a new research that was made. What do you think of that, Bill?
Oh, wow.
And you thought you were doing a wrestling show.
You don't mess around, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you want my opinion, the abortion thing should have been left alone, period.
Would you elaborate a little more?
Well, I don't think they should have changed it. You know, they shouldn't have, what is it, Roe versus Wade? They shouldn't have taken that out. I think you should be able to get an abortion if you need to.
Do you think this country hasn't progressed enough in certain areas? Like this example, like women not still achieving the same rights that they need within this country.
Yeah, the women's are still held down. Yeah, that's for sure. They're, you know, they should be paid the same. They should be doing, you know, they shouldn't, I don't know how to say it, but they should be pretty much, you know, they should be equal with the men in the country, which, you know, I'd like to say they are, but I know they're not. So. Mm.
You know. What do you think? How do you feel about the country right now, the state of the country? In my case, I'll share with you, I think the country's probably in the worst state it's ever been. What are your thoughts?
I think we were worse about 2.5 years ago. For 4 years, we were in a horse shit spot. I don't, if we're going to go politics, I'm not a Trump fan at all, period. Nothing more to say about it. I know.
You don't.
He's a lying.
fair enough, and that's a great part of it, right? It's like that's what this country's built on, right? Our opinions. The thing I have found, and it's not odd, but most of the wrestlers that I've spoken to are pretty hard right Republicans. So I'm glad to see there's someone on the left, and I'm not saying I'm on the right or the left, but I'm glad to see that there's another take on it, right?
Well, let's put it this way. Everybody, all the people in government, they all have their issues. They all have their problems. They're all pretty much the same, but you get down to a situation like we have now, and he is not worthy of being put back into the presidency. He's got so many crimes he's done, he can't keep up with them all. Anyway, you know, I just think that putting him back in office would be wrong, simply because I think he would try to take over. I think he won't leave next time he's in. He'll try to stay. You know he will. And we'll be doing this again down the road in 4 or 5 years. Or he'll try to have set it up with the, having the Supreme Court swayed his way, since he's put 3 or 4 of them in there. He's hoping that they'll save his butt on some of this stuff. I'm quite sure he is. I don't know whether they will or not. Don't know. But
fair enough.
You know.
All right, next news article. You ready?
Yeah, go.
Nude man nabbed by police after cannonball plunge into giant aquarium at a Bass Pro Shop in Alabama. A man crashed his car outside a Bass Pro Shop in Alabama, stripped down to his birthday suit, and plunged into a giant aquarium inside the store. The ordeal happened Thursday night in front of shocked shoppers in the town just outside Birmingham. Lead police officer Paul Irwin said. How do you like that one? What do you think about this? Does Alabama need to make some changes?
Well, I would suggest they need bigger fish, because I don't think he'd jump in some of the pools we got up here full of fish. They're probably as big as he is or bigger. But I don't, what the hell? I'd have to say, what is he on? You know, I mean, really. And the police officer's name was Irwin.
Yeah, I thought it would be fun, right?
I don't know. I don't know of a Paul in my family lineage of Irwins. Is it spelled the same? I-R-W-I-N?
Yes, sir, it is.
Wow. I don't know.
Maybe. It'd be a long lost relative.
You know? Never know.
Never know. All right, this hit the news today, a little bit of the WrestleLink business. And I really do would like to hear your opinion on this. WWE founder Vince McMahon accused of sexual abuse and trafficking in a lawsuit of a former employee. A former employee of the WWE sued founder Vince McMahon, allegedly he abused and sexually exploited her when he was CEO of the wrestling company. McMahon allegedly trafficked her to other men as a pawn to secure talent deals. Thoughts on that, sir?
Oh, wow. I just heard that on the local news before this started, and it was like, oh, for Christ's sake. That's a little bit of both ways, I think. I don't really know. I don't know the lady. I don't know, you know, and I don't know Vince that well. I know the wrestling industry, you know. Is there a certain amount of sex going around out there all the time? Yeah. I wouldn't have a clue whether he's selling people or doing this or doing that, all of that stuff. I don't know. I haven't been there in 25 years, so I don't know anymore. In the old days, you know, you had arena rats, that kind of thing, fans, and that, you know. But as far as, you know, having someone that you're selling and or you know, giving them off to people, I don't know. And to me, it's like, geez, you know, he's got enough money that why would he? What would be the point? He doesn't have to do it. What's the point?
As a male, an older male like you and I are, do you feel like it's more dangerous out there? Like you have to be very careful of everything that you do here, or you'll be accused of something inappropriate?
Probably, yeah. I mean, yeah, in our day out there, things were easier. Now, you know, you don't know what's going on. I would think that, yeah, you're going to have to, you know, make sure, you know, you're going to have to cover your bases. You know, you can't, you never really could do anything out there, you know, that you'd had to worry about if you're raping women or something. Well, you were going to be.
Well, I don't mean raping women. I mean, like, you know, you're working with a woman and, you know, you give her a compliment or something like that. Oh, I like your dress, or I like this. You know, do you feel like in today's environment that even that could be misconstrued and ruin your life?
Well, it can be misconstrued, and could it ruin your life? Possibly, I guess. Therefore, I guess you got to learn to keep your mouth shut a little bit too, you know?
Yeah. I guess
so. You're just trying to be nice. I can understand. And someone might take it wrong. That happens. You know, and what you can do about it, all I could say is shut up. Don't say anything.
Now that That's a quote we have to use. Bill Irwin, shut up, mind your own business, and everybody will be just fine. I would like to thank the band that sings a theme song for Monty Nefaro. Our own Jimmy Farrow, along with his partner, Bart Griggs, make up the band Wisteria Hall. They sing such great songs as In My Dreams, This Life, Not Far Behind, Here Comes the Rain. You can find their music on the Wisteria Hall YouTube page. Hit that like and subscribe. Spotify, Apple Music, Reverb Nation, download it, listen, enjoy. If you didn't know it, you are watching Long Island's number one pro wrestling broadcast, Monty Nefaro. Catch us on the Monty Nefaro YouTube page, Facebook Live page. Hear us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Anchor, Twitch TV page. And if you're lucky enough to live in New York, catch us on Channel 115 every Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. and Saturday at 11:30 a.m. and Channel 20 at 7 p.m. And if that's not enough catching us, we're also on the Intuitive Network. That's Intuitive. They've got drama, they've got comedy, they got music videos, and more importantly, they've got Monty Nefaro. We'll be right back, who I consider one of the all-time great icon, and this is a privilege for me, being an old WWE guy who was captivated by the world of WCCW, where I first saw the gentleman across the country wrestling, Wild Bill Irwin. We'll be right back. Sir? Manscaped? You know, have you tried the new equipment that's been sent?
I'm afraid because it says weed whacker. I'm scared.
Maven, Manscaped, what are you thinking about Manscaped, dude?
Love it.
What do you use it for?
Necessity. What don't I use it for? Put it this way. The only hair I have on my entire body is these eyebrows.
Yeah.
That you see. These caterpillars racing to the middle of my nose. That's it.
That is it.
That's all I have.
And that's all I want.
That's the
so Manscaped is a must.
We were talking before the show, there's nothing worse than just hair.
Yeah.
Right? Hair on a woman, hair on a man, it's just bad.
Absolutely. And it's the one thing that the older I get, it starts growing more in unwanted areas.
Absolutely.
I hate it.
I'm going to ask you a question.
Uh-oh.
Just going to go out there.
Oh, boy.
Go for it.
You're doing a deed.
Yes.
Again, I don't want you to have to admit this because we... As men, we try not to admit this, but if you're going to go do the deed on a woman, would you rather have her be hairless or a little hair, racing stripe, or
racing stripe.
Full retro bush?
Racing stripe.
Retro bush is out.
Yes, thank you.
Retro bush is out.
Yeah.
I don't mind a small, well-manicured landing strip. Every now and then, if it's completely, and I'm talking like baby's ass bald, then I start. Where is that pedophilia line? I don't want to wander into that.
That's very interesting. Like that. I never thought about that. You're a smart dude. Holy shit.
So if the landing strip is clean enough for the plane to go in smoothly, you're cool with that.
If the landing strip has, like I said, well manicured, can see both sides. It's not
like blinking lights on both sides of that.
I just don't. I don't want. You know, I don't want the shrubbery going off into unwanted areas on that.
Gotcha.
As well.
Oh, yeah, look what you found. Ooh.
I got to be all honest, gotcha. Though. Hey, the older I get, though, I don't think I can be as...
I found it! Have you ever gone down there and, like, just like you, she slowly brings down the underwear then?
What is
retro?
Absolutely.
You're like, whoa!
Wow,
yeah,
like it pops out?
Do you, like, walk out, or what do you do?
No, I muster through. I muster up the courage to get through.
He's a trooper.
Yeah.
He's a trooper. Got to give him an A.
Yeah, not all heroes wear capes.
Yeah, I hear you. Listen, I couldn't say, if you have the same beliefs as Maven does, Manscaped could help you.
Absolutely.
The weed whacker.
Absolutely.
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that I may have to, like, you know, go in a room, close the door, and hang out with the weed whacker for a little while.
Yeah, I think you're a retro guy, aren't you?
I like 70s adult films, if that's what you're getting at.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
but with that, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back with this wrestling icon, Maven.
We will see you in a dropkick second.
Dropkick. All right, welcome back to Long Island's number one pro wrestling broadcast, Monty Nefaro, where we're honored to have this pro wrestling legend, Mr. Wild Bill Irwin. Bill, how are you, bud?
I'm alive and well. I don't know if I can get over, if I can put up with that much more. Well, whatever that was. Holy moly. You're not going there. Don't even think about it. I'm not going there.
That's just a commercial, man. Bill, tell me about you growing up in your early life.
Well, I don't know. I was born out in California. We moved to Minnesota when I was three, and Duluth, Minnesota. We lived, I don't know, we ended up six blocks from a hockey rink. And in Minnesota, you know, everybody plays hockey. Doesn't matter. You play hockey. And so we ended up, you know, starting to go to the rink at 3 or 4 or 5 years old. And pretty soon, you know, you're playing on the teams. I grew up playing hockey all the way up through high school, then played in college. At a local college here, College of St. Scholastica. We were national champs in 1975. I got to look over here on this. Yeah, I don't know.
Nice.
National champ, NAIA, back in 70, what was it, 75? Let me think, I got to read it. Anyway. Yeah, 75. So I went to high school here. So grew up playing baseball, Little League, you know, all the sports. My dad was a longshoreman down on the docks, you know, loading and unloading the ships that come in. You know, this is a port city where it's the farthest west you can go with a big ship, Duluth, Minnesota. And so, you know, he worked on the docks, and we were just kids going to the rink and running around. My older brother, Scott, he was 2.5 years older than me. We played hockey, baseball, and then started playing some football and went on through school. I don't know. I was no great student. I think I could have been a better student. Right. I don't think I'm ignorant or stupid. If I want to figure something out, I can. I just, I don't know, you know.
Now, do you naturally learn how to skate? I mean, I can't skate. I can't ski. How easy did that come to you?
You know, the thing to do is, I tell people now, you know, I see them with their kids, they're young, you know, in their arms. I says, that when he's 3 years old, buy him skates. Oh, no, no, no. That's too early. Maybe later. Maybe when he's 5 or 6. No. 3 years old, when they start walking, you get them skates and get them on the ice. And they'll be skating before 4, and they'll be flying and going. And you learn it easier and faster when you're young as a little kid. They'll pick it right up. Because a little kid falls down, he just gets up. Same thing on the ice. They fall down, they get up, you know, they just go on. The older you get, you start to worry about falling down, a 6 or 7 year old, you know, and then he's worried about what the other kids think. Start them really young and you'll pick up skating easy. If you try to start later, it gets a little bit harder, although you can pick it up, not that you can't. It's just easier if you start them when they're young and just kind of get them out there, and they'll start toddling around, and, you know, and then pretty soon the one thing that really gets them going is, you know, once they go to school, you know, if your kid's not playing hockey, all the kids are playing hockey, period. Now that might be a little much, but in my world, the whole thing was hockey. And yeah, so you go, once you go there and you find all your little friends, they're all going off to the local rinks and stuff, and pretty soon you're meeting them there afterwards and running. Yeah, that's where you go, and that's where you learn to play. You know, that's where you pick up the sticks and the ability to stick handle and get around somebody, and you learn what you like to do and what you don't like to do on the ice is when you're really young. And then as you get older, it just develops faster and faster, just like baseball or football or anything, but
Well, I always tell people, like, you can lift weights, become this like bodybuilder guy, but you can't teach height and natural size. You and your brother were huge. Was your father a big man?
Yeah, he's about, I guess he would have been about the same size as me. Scott was a little bit bigger. Scott was, I don't know, he was more like 6'3". And, oh God, he was more of a 300-pounder. He went down, he played football for the University of Minnesota down at in Minneapolis out of Duluth. And geez, I can't even remember the coach's name way back. That would have been back in 1970, something like that. But he ran a 4.5 40
Wow.
back then.
Holy
Yeah.
cow.
And he was a lineman. He was a defensive lineman. So as a
Who was the better football player, you or your brother?
oh, he was.
Yeah.
I was the better option.
By the way, Jay Will says you are in great shape.
Who's Jay Will?
It's one of the fans watching you. He says, "Man, you look like you're in great shape."
Well, I've started, my wife started me. You know how wives are, they get you going. Yeah, I was here, I don't know, 6, 8 months ago, even maybe a little farther back. She starts going, her doctor says, well, you should go walk 15 minutes and then, and then come back 15 minutes, and that's a half hour walk. That'll be good for you. Oh, okay, we start doing that, and then I see her going out there. Where are you going? Well, I'm going for a walk. Oh, all right, I'll go with you. So we go. Yeah, now we're walking. Then my son, gets. He tells us of this Fitbit thing on your phone. Oh, how many steps you want to do? Oh, I don't know. What about 10,000? That's like 5 miles a day. Oh, I don't know. Okay, sure. Well, no. Now the phone runs our life, and we walk every day back and forth. I was at 255. I'm at 220 now, so I've leaned way down. I don't, you change. We changed our diet. We got away from so much red meat and pastas and all that. Now basically it's fruits and vegetables. I'm a fruitcake. So. And it's not, I don't know. You always tried to lose weight. I always tried to lose weight when I was working on the road and all that shit too. But, you never changed your diet. You're always eating hamburgers, or you're on the
Right.
road eating French fries, or, you got to cut all that crap out. I mean, as soon as I got around to just eat, nowadays I get up and I make a protein shake in the morning, with fruit and apple, a banana, some strawberries or some blueberries or orange. Put it in, mix it up with your protein, and boom, I drink that, and I pour some of it over my shredded wheat. No sugar on the shredded wheat, just the shredded. That's what I have for breakfast. Then we come back and eat a big salad for about lunch, and in the evening we might have some chicken or, pork. But red meat, not so much. We just kind of got away from it all, and the weight falls off, just fell off. So
What are
I
you
was like
weighing right now?
222, 223.
Not bad. 6'3", right? 223. Not too bad.
No, leaned out. So yeah, but when I wrestled all those years, I was at 250, 255.
Yeah.
So I had a little extra on me.
Speaking of wrestling, what makes you become a pro wrestler, hockey player, football player? What turns you into becoming a pro wrestler?
My brother. Brothers get you in more trouble than ever. Well, anyway, Scott was at the University of Minnesota, and he started his first 2 years. His freshman year, he was a starter for the University of Minnesota, and then for 2 years he started, and then they changed coaches. The new coach, I don't know names, but he came in. He brought in. Well, obviously, he brought in his own talent, right? And Scott kind of got set to the side. And so basically, in his senior year, he still liked football, but he was kind of disgruntled with it. And so I think he talked to And Jim Brunzell went to the University of Minnesota. So did Vern Gagne. And somebody told him, well, maybe you should try, you know, wrestling. Go see if Vern Gagne is having a camp. Maybe you can become a wrestler. And Scott never wrestled. I mean, as an amateur, actually, quite frankly, there is no amateur wrestling up in northern Minnesota. It's in Wisconsin, but they get a little bit of amateur up here now. But anyway, point being, he went to that camp, and Ricky Steamboat, Cosgrove Aceres, you know who Cosgrove was, right?
Yes, sir.
The Iron Sheik.
Yep.
He was running this camp for Vern. Ricky Steamboat, my brother Scott, Buck Zumhoff, Lord knows. And there were two other guys that came through. They both died relatively early in their careers from car wrecks. Mm. And so it was Ricky Steamboat and Scott and Buck Zumhoff. And they went through the camp. And then, you know, so he comes out. Now he gets to, Vern sends him off places. And now about that time, Scott's getting in. I'm finishing up skating at the up here in Duluth, my hockey. You know, I didn't make it all the way through college. I got about 2.5 years in, and coach didn't seem like to play me too much. But anyway, so one day I walked out off the ice, and that was it. But then Scott said, hey, well, get out of Duluth. You got to get out of Duluth, you know. And so I said, well, he was down in Charlotte running with Ric Flair, Blackjack Mulligan, Crusher Blackwell, all the people that were down there at that time. And he says, come to Charlotte and just come and visit. Just get out of Duluth. Well, I left and went down there, and I think it was 77, and I moved home in 98. So I went down there, started first day I'm down there. We go training, you know, of course, everybody, you know, wrestlers, they got to train. So we go, we're going to go train. I think, what are we going to do? Well, we're going to do squats and sit-ups. Oh, Christ. We went over to Ric Flair's house, and we're doing squats out in the sun, you know. I'm from northern Minnesota. We don't have any sun up here. You know what I mean?
Right.
And we're out in the sun in the Carolinas doing squats and sit-ups. Pretty soon I'm puking in Flair's bathroom. You know, but anyway, got through that, you know. And then when I'm living there with Scott for a couple of months, and you start, you know, you meet Ric Flair, that kind of thing. Then they went, well, you want to drive me tomorrow? You drive my car. I don't want to drive. You drive me to the building. I'll, you know, okay. So I'd drive some of them around, or I'd go with Scott, and we'd go to the matches every night. Just after a little while, then pretty soon, you know, in Charlotte, the ring was always up. I think it ran on Saturday night. So on Saturday afternoons, you could go to the ring and get in the ring. And Larry Sharp, I don't know if you know who Larry Sharp was.
Absolutely, yep.
Larry Sharp was good friends with Scott. And we would go to the ring on Saturday afternoons and go over there, and they'd beat the Jesus out of me. You know, I'd get in there and try to do stuff, and we're doing stuff. And, you know, it wasn't being athletic. Yeah, it's not too hard to learn to hit the ropes. Can you flip over? Can you fall down? Can you get up? You're doing it, you know, they're showing you how to do it. Boom, boom. And then Larry Sharp's putting the squeeze on you, you know, trying to see if you, you know, if you can take it. He's trying to, you know, get you to say, I quit, or anything. But, nah, I didn't do that. I don't know. I guess I was pretty limber. I don't know. He tried to reef on you and didn't, I don't know. It didn't really hurt or didn't bother me. So, you know, finally one day we went 300 miles east. The next day we went 300 miles west of Charlotte. And I saw the same match two nights in a row. Same people, same match. Move for move. And I said, Scott, I just saw that one, same. And he goes, oh. you're starting to catch on, you know. And so, yeah, so after that, then it was a matter of just learning the moves, learn the vocabulary. And I had my first match with Professor Malenko in Lynchburg, Virginia in 77, 78, I don't know, something like that. And he twisted me in knots. He was, I mean, didn't hurt me, but, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I went out there and got spun around, twisted around, picked up, slammed down, whatever. I went back in. So I'm walking back into the, locker room. And Baron von Raschke looks at me and he goes, "So you want to be a wrestler, huh, kid?" I don't know. I guess I just laughed. But, you know, he's from Minnesota. And so it was kind of like, that's kind of where it got started. And then Christmas showed up. We came home for Christmas and then went back down there. And that's when I think George Scott was the booker in Charlotte at the time. And they sent me to Atlanta for down there with Ole Anderson and those guys. Well, I went down there, and Tommy Rich was there. Tony Atlas was there. Rick Martel was there. There were some other older guys. Jesus, I can't remember their names. But, you know, Ole was there. Gene Anderson was there. They were all going on. And so Ole, yeah, I don't know, He booked me, you know, every week, 3-4 times a week. So, you know, started running around, started running with Tommy Rich because we were basically the same age. I was actually older than Tommy. Tommy's fairly young, but, you know, young, good-looking kid being pushed for the title and stuff. And so, yeah, we became friends and started running up and down. And Martel was there, same age. He's down out of Montreal. So, yeah. Kind of fit right in. Did I ever really plan on it? No, not at all. You know, but I think I went to one wrestling match in my career in Duluth, Minnesota when I was a kid. Cause you know, Byrne was on every Saturday and I went down and all I remember is the Alaskan was there and he had a bullwhip.
Wow.
I think that's where I picked up. Bill picked up the bullwhip anyway.
Excellent. So speaking about your brother, unfortunately, he passed at a significantly early age. How difficult is that to get over? And do you still live with it? Do you think about him often?
Oh, I talk to him all the time, you know. Yeah, is it difficult? Yeah, it's difficult to get over. It's difficult to get through. You know, there wasn't much that could be done. You know, we were up in Montreal when that all set in, you know. He thought he had a pinched nerve and turns out to be a brain tumor. And, you know, he thought he needed a chiropractor. Kept going to doctor and doctor and finally went to a doctor and they sent him over here. And then they sent him to the neurosurgeon and it was kind of like, well, you have, a brain cancer. And it was like fingers all through the brain, not just like one tumor. So they gave him a year and a half. And, you know, he lasted about a year and a half. But, you know, so, yeah, that it was, I don't know, it's not, it was hard to do, but it wasn't much anything that couldn't be done, you know. So.
Well, I mentioned earlier how much you meant to me personally as a fan of professional wrestling and where I first saw you was in WCCW. How do you end up working for the great Fritz Von Erich?
Well, first of all, you got to be down in Tampa with Randy Tyler, leaving with Buck Robley, going to go to Atlanta. And going to work Buck Robley was going to be the booker in Atlanta. Well, between Tampa and Atlanta, Buck Robley got fired. And so now we're traveling to Atlanta with, we don't know what if we're going to be able to book or not. We don't know nothing. So Randy Tyler knew Oh, Christ. What's her name up there in Canada? Calgary. The Owens. Owen Hart.
Oh,
the Hart.
Owen, oh, okay. The Harts.
He knew them. So he called old man Hart. And so we went from Tampa to Calgary. We lasted there about 2 months. Crazy up there. Absolutely crazy. And then Scott got me booked down in Dallas, Texas. And then once I got down there, that's where things started to change for me. They seemed to like me down there.
I think everybody liked you down there. The yeah. Iron Claw just came out. Not just came out. Have you had an opportunity to see it?
No, I have not. I haven't seen it. I've talked to several people that know about it, from James Beard to, David Manning, who's down there. I don't know if you know these people or not, but they were all in on the Fritz Von Erich situation and the Von Erichs down there. They've seen it. And there's a couple other people, Bill, God, I can't think of his name. Been hitting the head with too many chairs. Can't remember names. Bill Cobble is down there, and he was a guy that walked you to and from the ring and that kind of stuff, so in talking with them, they've seen it, and I've heard that there's some liberties taken. I think that it's not quite true to exactly what I would remember, but I think movie's a movie. You're just trying to get something across and portray something. So some people have said it's pretty good, and other ones say it's not that good. And I think the ones that say it's not that good are the ones that were really there. Mm. The ones, people that don't really know or weren't really there with the Von Erichs and go through and live through it like I did, they don't think it's that good. So I don't know. I haven't gone to see it yet.
As a moviegoer, I thought they focused way too much on the wrestling aspect of it, where they really had a good story to tell, and I felt they could have done a better job, but a lot of people enjoyed it. In the movie, though, Bill, they portray Fritz Von Erich as being this, I would say almost this cold-hearted guy that pushed his kids to the limit. Is that the Fritz Von Erich you knew?
No, not at all. Maybe a little bit, yes, but not really in that, I don't know, Fritz, I don't know if how I fit in so well, but he seemed to like me. I mean, I can tell you a story. I'm there. You go there to pick up your check on, I think it was every Friday or Tuesday or whatever day it was, it doesn't really matter. But one day I was there, and of course Vince was there. Fritz was there. And, so I was just talking to him and asking him if checks were ready. And he goes, no, it's going to be a little while. And I said, he says, well, what's the matter? And I said, well, I've got I need a root canal. I'm going to take the check and go get this root canal at this dentist right today, right now. I need the money to go pay for it. And then he goes, well, go upstairs and, talk to the lady, his secretary. She'll have a check for, she'll get you your check. And then he says, well, how much is the root canal? And I said, it was $150. I mean, that sounds ridiculous now, but
yeah, it does.
In those days, I mean, it was $150. And he had a secretary put in an extra $150 to pay for my root canal. And so, God, he was always nice to me. Everybody was, on Bronco Lubitsch, who was his referee, he's the one that named me. He said they were trying to figure out, well, Bill Irwin, what the hell? What kind of a name is that? What are we gonna have? And Bronco said, well, he's just wild in the ring. Just call him Wild Bill. So I ended up to be Wild Bill, and from Wild Bill, I kind of went on to the cowboy thing a little bit, And then, you know, I started with the long, the tall boots and just kind of added. Then I went into jeans and all that kind of stuff. And the character came through. And so, you know, do I think, but was Fritz pushy with his kids? Yeah, maybe. Cause I know Mike. Mike was a, he was a musician. He played guitar and he liked to, he wanted to be in a band because he was coming up just when I was there and he was young, coming to high school. He wanted to play music and be in a band. And I think the old man said, no, you're going to wrestle. So he didn't get to be in a band and he got put into the ring with the rest of the boys. And, you know, I don't think his heart was ever in it. I mean, he wasn't bad. I worked with him, but, you know, I don't think his, like I said, his heart wasn't into it. I think the old man probably should have let him put some money behind him and make him a rock and roll star if he wanted to do anything. But, you know, talk is cheap.
So clearly you were close with the, somewhat close with the Von Erich boys in general. When did they, because again, I'm just a fan, Bill, so I don't know. So I'm just going from what I hear. When did they start to spiral out of control with the drug use?
Oh, that was everybody in those days. That was just a, you know, you got young kids with a certain amount of money and fame. So they end up doing the things they probably shouldn't be doing, you know, got themselves in a little bit of trouble. They, you know, Carrie's the one that, you know, really had the problem, I think, and his biggest problem was he just got caught, for Christ's sake. You know, he broke his foot on a motorcycle. And I think then he got popped with cocaine or something. And, you know, a judge said something like, oh, you do this again, we're going to, you know, send you off. And then I think he got popped again with some cocaine. And so he was afraid he was headed off to jail, you know. And plus, he'd had the accident with his foot and, you know, had the problem there. So things were kind of spiraling a little bit on him. But do I think that they're any worse than any of the other, any of the rest of us that were there? No. you know, some were a little more into some of the stuff. Some were into maybe just smoking weed. Maybe some got into a little bit more. But yeah, I didn't ever think it was really that bad. You know, there was, you know, there's always a little bit of something around anywhere you go. And did I think Carrie was really deep into it? No, not really. No, you know, but he got himself into a situation that I think he got scared and then he just, you know, offed himself, which was, oh man, too much. David was a whole nother story, you know, David, you know, I don't know. David was a, what do they call it? Can't think of a purger. Mm. You know, where they puke, they'll eat food and puke it up. So that's, you know, I was with him the night that he moved on. He was, that's a whole other story, but
so I know you've told that story a lot, right? And I get it, but I guess the question I have for you, you hear the different stories, and again, it's been clear at a lot of points that it was that like an intestinal issue, but then you hear stories that Brody was throwing drugs out of his room. You were there. I saw you on a WWE documentary way back where you said It was the case of, you know, not a drug issue. Is that the case?
Yeah. It wasn't a drug issue. No, because I had been with him all day. I flew over there on a plane with him. We sat in LA in a bar waiting. Yes, this is what everybody did when they went to Japan. You go to LA, you wait for the plane, but you're sitting in a bar with then all the wrestlers that are going on the trip start showing up, and you guys are having a few beers, and then pretty soon it's get on the plane, and on the plane you have a few more beers, and then they, on the way to Japan, they feed you relatively early, so then you eat a nice meal, then you fall asleep, and when you wake up, you land, and then you get off the plane, and generally you'd go to like a meeting with the press. They'd ask questions, and that's where, you know, you stayed as baby faces and heels and talked tough about each other. And then afterwards, you know, you kind of got out of there, and then we went and ate some more. So, you know, and then we went over to Ribera Steakhouse and ate and ordered steaks and potatoes and stuff, big meals. And then, and he had like two of them. David had two of these meals, right? And it's like, holy Christ, how do I eat so much? Well, anyway, so we'll keep going. And eventually we head back, we get back to the hotel. And so, of course, we're not finished yet. We got to go into the bar and have a couple of drinks, you know. So we go into the bar and, you know, have a couple of drinks. And he orders up some food. And it's like, wow, Jesus. And then he disappears. He says, I got to run up to my room. So he runs up to his room. Shit, I don't know. What the hell? And then he comes back down in a few minutes and he starts eating more food. Jesus. You know, yeah, well, okay. I mean, he was tall, big guy. What the hell? And, you know, then it was pretty much time to head on off. And he goes, hey, Bill, you want to come up to my room? Oh, I don't know. Yeah, what do you got? What's going on? So we go up there. Go in there and sit down, chit chat, laugh and giggle because we're, you know, we're the same age and out of the same territory. And, you know, so he says, well, okay, I'm going to call my wife. And I says, yeah, I think it's time for me to, you know, get to bed, right? All right. So I'm out of there, but I leave him on, I guess what I'm trying to say is on the short side of the bed where it's closer to the wall. You know, the other side's wider. So over here's where the phone is. Well, he sits on that side. Okay, see ya. And he's getting the phone. And okay, bye. I'm gone. I go to bed, get up the next day. Everything's cool. Everybody's fine. You know, going along. I never see David all day. But I figured, well, you know, he's the star coming over here. And then, you know, they might be taking him out, go someplace, go do something. And he was gone. I didn't see him all day. Now we're getting on the bus and, you know, everybody's on the bus and Brody's on the bus and I'm on the bus and everybody else is on the bus. Where's David? And then in comes, I can't think of his name, the referee over there, the one referee that spoke enough English so that he could referee the Americans match. He comes on and goes, Brody, come. And I'm sitting right behind Brody, you know, if you're in a bus, so you're kind of like, huh. So there that goes. There goes Brody off with the Joe Higuchi, that's his name, I believe, and the referee's name. So they go off. And in the distance, we hear sirens, you know. And all the guys are all looking at each other. We're all looking like, what? Whoosh, we all get up out the door. We followed Brody and Joe Higuchi in, and you go up one flight of stairs. He was on the first floor, I guess it would be the second floor, in a corner room. And in the hotel person unlocks the door, and we all go in. Brody goes in, I go in, Joe Higuchi goes in, and here come all the other boys right behind us. We go, and it's in a room where you kind of come in, and you go around a bend. The bathroom was here, so you went around it. And when you came in, there's the bed. Well, there's David laid back on the bed. He's as blue as a pair of jeans, man. You know, he's right where I left him when he was going to make the phone call, and he was blue. Oh, God. So here in come, you start, now you're hearing the ambulances are arriving, and they come running up, and they come in, and they, you know, they start working on him on the bed. Well, the bed's bouncing blue. They can't do anything. So Brody and I are standing I'm at his head. Brody's at his feet. So they wanted him on the floor. So I grab David's hands or his wrists. And Brody's got his feet, and we slide him to the edge and, you know, put him on the floor. To put him on the floor. And when his head drops back, I've got his head right here. His head drops back off the edge of the bed. Out of his mouth comes just bleh, like a bunch of food just right out of his mouth. And then the guy's wiping it away and trying to pump him and wiping it away. But he was gone. Mm. He was gone there. And they tried, but there was nothing. And do I think it was drug induced? No.
Speaking of Brody, how upset were you when you heard about his murder in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, that angered me to, you know, a certain extent, in that I just said, I'll never go to Puerto Rico. I never necessarily wanted to anyway. But I just said, no, I'll never go to Puerto Rico.
So that just sealed the deal for you?
No, sealed it. I'm not going to Puerto Rico. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. What are you going to say?
Well, I just, you know, I know a few people. I mean, I've talked with Tony Atlas. He's told me the story a couple of times on the whole nine yards of that, which, you know, I don't know the story like he does, so he can repeat that story. But I don't know. No, I just wouldn't go over there anymore.
So to keep you on the timeline, David passes. You have that tribute show. Kerry beats Flair for the NWA title.
Mm-hmm.
As being part of that WCCW team, what did that mean to you guys, or what did it mean to you that this great championship was now in your territory that you helped make iconic?
Wow. At the time, you're not into making iconics. You're just a dumb kid at 20-some years old running up and down the road having a good time. And was it a big deal? Yeah, it was great, you know. Bad that David died, but Kerry got the belts. We had the biggest show. This was before Vince ever had WrestleMania. So this was one of the biggest, I think it was the biggest show ever in the United States, continental United States, ever we had there. And so, yeah, it was great that we were in on it and did it and had, you know, that kind of stuff. But as far as like being a momentum in or something in your life, is I don't know, God, we just moved on and kept going, you know. The territory was running great, everything was going good, so you just kept running, you know.
I mean, you kind of answered the question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. You know, you mentioned about everybody was doing drugs and things like that. But, you know, I know you're young, but you're also smart. You're a smart man. You understand that the organization that you're building right now is making, you know, making major headways within the industry. And you know it's wrapped around the Von Erichs. Is there a point, are you like, yo, guys, you're screwing this up for everybody?
Well... You mean like on their actions and what they're doing, and seems
well,
like
yeah, because it's built around them, and you guys legitimately could have been the WWE. I do believe that. It just got screwed up.
Yes. Yeah, we were in front of the WWE, but we were ahead of them in the time frame. You know, that new TV show that they brought to Fritz, and with the cameras right on the edge of the. On the edge of the ring and all running around like they did, the way that things were done, that was kind of a new way of doing things in the wrestling industry. Yeah, we knew about it and we knew we were doing it and making things were getting better, you know, and changing the way things are done out there. But did it? Sometimes you kind of thought to yourself, you know, they need to try and straighten up, but I don't know. When you're young, it's kind of hard to tell somebody else your own age you need to straighten up. But you know, sometimes they would be somewhere in not very good shape, and you'd have to kind of take care of them. you know, literally in the ring or something. You know, you just get out there and kind of work with them and do what you can with the match and get it over and get home safely, basically, right? But yeah, we knew it was going well. But, you know, again, we're not.
I get it.
I guess we're in a situation where, as far as I was concerned, I was really young to the business in that I didn't know the business much before I got into it. And suddenly I'm into it now. I'd said when I got in, I says, I'll give myself 5 years and see how I'm doing. Well, 5 years, I'm there with the Von Erichs running like crazy and, you know, getting pushed on TV and, you know, you know, talking tough and acting stupid, basically. So, you know, yeah. Was it, yeah, sometimes you kind of, when you think back about it, you think, oh, Jesus, yeah. You know, what were we doing? How is it that I lived through it, basically? I talked to several people that were there during the times and all the places that I was. And we always say, I don't know, how'd we get through, you know? Many, many of us didn't get through.
Well, thank God you did, man. Thank God you did. Yeah. You finally get the call to the WWE. It's the big time. I know you went to WCW for a bit, but we're going to skip over that. Can you tell me what was it like when you first get that call and who called you?
Bruce Pritchard. Well, it's basically in that, you know, things are ending when this is, what is it, 84? 84? No.
I think a little 90, later than that. Yeah,
95, 94. This is when my son was just born, so I remember that he was born in 95, and where I'm trying to get a hold of Bruce Pritchard, who's obviously, you know, what was he? He's up there with Vince, and he was... What was it? What was the name of that character right there?
Brother Love.
Brother Love. So Brother Love was big on TV, and I knew him from, you know, being out on the roads and stuff. So I'd call him and, you know, just seeing if you got any space, could you use me? You know, but he says, well, I don't know, you know. And so finally one day he says, well, he says, if you were brought up, what would you want to do? Because Vince, you know, he wouldn't want to keep Wild Bill. He'd want something different, you know. And like I've said before, right off the tip of my tongue, I don't know why it hit me, but I said, well, you've had every other athletic endeavor coming in and being a professional wrestler, but you've never had a hockey player. Then he goes, a hockey player? I says, yeah, hockey player. And, you know, and then from one question to the next, he goes, well, a hockey player, what's going to make you different from anybody else? I mean, you just, you know, you're a guy that played hockey. So what? I says, well, no. I says, if I can go skate, you know, 3 20-minute periods with shin pads and all that attire on, I can definitely get in the ring and wrestle for 20 minutes, 30 minutes with it on. That's not going to be a problem. Oh, what do you mean? Oh, yeah, anyway, so basically I told him, I said, well, you know, hey, I could get a pair of skates, take the blades off of them, take the skates to a shoe guy and have him put on those, the foam rubber soles that are on the wrestling boots. And then I said, stack them up and then have him taper them in so that they, when I'm standing on them, they'll look like skates. But they are skates, but they're going to have the, you know, the look of an ice skate blade. And I says, I can get gloves and I can wear the elbow pads and I can wear the pants and I could even wear shin pads. And I'll go out there and I can wrestle in that attire, go to the ring as, you know. And he goes, hey. And then he says, okay, I'll call you next week. Well, he calls me back and he says, Vince liked it. He's going to call you the goon. Okay. So I don't know. Then from there it was like, well, you need to get out here. You need to, you know, I'll send you a ticket, get out there. You know, you go in, when you go in there, they measure you, you know, for costumes or whatever. You go through all this stuff and, you know, sit down, talk with Vince, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, basically we got to, like, we went and bought the skates, the gloves, the jerseys, the pants, the shin pads, all of it. And the hockey socks, garter belt, you know, nut cup, everything to play hockey. Boom. And we did that. And then, I don't know, a couple weeks later, a week or so later, I went back out there and we went and did some vignettes, as they used to call them. And it was the goon going to the hockey rink and skating. And we went and did some vignettes out there. And when we got to the rink, I thought, well, God, what am I going to do? I'm all alone. I'm going to be on a hockey rink. What am I going to do? Skate in circles, shoot the puck? Big deal, right? Well, just so happens that there was five or six guys out there having a little pickup game on the rink. You know, they must have rented the ice and they're right before us. And so I said, hey. I said, guys, come here. I explained what's going on. And I says, would you guys want to be out there on the ice with me and I'll trip you and slash you and do all these, you know, run you into the boards and all that kind of crap. And, you know, we'll get you some tickets or whatever to the shows. And they were in, you know, that was it. They were in. So we did those vignettes and did all that stuff. And then off we went. And that's how the goon got started.
Great story. We did have T.L. Hopper in studio, though, and he did say that at that point, Vince was grabbing some of the major players like yourself, and he kind of was putting them in gimmicks and saddling them with gimmicks that he knew wasn't going to get over. But just you telling that story right now, it doesn't seem to be the case. What are your thoughts on that comment?
Well, I don't think he was throwing them in gimmicks that he didn't think would get over. I think he was just throwing gimmicks out there to see what would get over. You know, it's like throwing shit up against the wall, see what sticks. Now, it might have been at the end of kind of the gimmick time frame, in that he was the toilet guy, the plumber, mm-hmm. and kid out of Florida.
God, we had Duke name? The Dumpster, right?
Duke the Dumpster, yeah. Yeah, just these different characters, they brought him in. Now, the goon character, in my opinion, and of course my opinion means nuts, when he got there, I think the fans liked it. They kind of enjoyed it. But the booker, what was his name, Jim Ross? Yeah, Jim Ross. Jim Ross didn't know what to do with it. Maybe he didn't like it. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't his idea. He thought it was stupid. I don't know. But he just never really kind of did too much with it. I was always just come and do TV. But, you know, and quite frankly, I can remember, I think when I was there, the Stanley Cup was starting. And here you've got this goon hockey player, and you're not having him talking about the Stanley Cup or saying, I'm going to be there. Or, you know what I mean?
Right.
Mixing it up, maybe having somebody come with a other team's jersey, you know, whatever. You could have done, I think, a lot of things, but I don't think Jim Ross saw it that way, and so it just kind of faded away, is what it did. But you know, I was there for what, 7-8 months, God, maybe 9 months, but people, they still remember the goon, and you know, they still love the goon and all that.
That's right.
Come and autographs and, oh, God, you know, yeah. You know, like, I don't know why this didn't get over more than it did, you know. But there you go.
Well, I got to tell you again, I want to thank you for joining us. So right before we head out, whether you know this or not, Bill, you're also part of an iconic moment in podcasting. I'm going to play a video for you. And if you would appease the fans out there, they would like to know what you were thinking after this question's asked to you. We're going to play that video, and if you could answer.
Wrestled The Undertaker in one match. Would that have been the biggest match you had in the WWE? I think it was on Superstars.
That's one of those things where, you know, really, I don't know.
To me, is it the biggest match? No. Is it? I don't know how to answer that question. That's like, who's your biggest match? Well, the hell? I've been doing this for fucking 40 years, and you're asking me who in the fuck's my biggest
match? All right, you're a fucking worthless. You're a fucking worthless drunk. Go to hell, you worthless loser.
Thank you.
Bill. That was a terrible question that he asked you, so I certainly understand why you got upset. But if you can share what you were thinking at that point of that interview.
Well, I think what I was thinking was that we hadn't been getting along on the interview anyway. He was telling me some stuff about Steve Kern when I was the Black Scorpion, and Steve Kern, he was saying that Steve Kern was the Black Scorpion, and I was trying to tell him that something that I don't know if he didn't want to believe, maybe he just wanted to argue about it. I don't know. Steve Kern, he said that Steve Kern said that he was one of the Black Scorpions. If Steve Kern said he was a Black Scorpion back on the WCCW days, he was. I'm not going to argue that point at all. I was one of them, and we all traveled around filling Ric Flair's shoes, working with people when Ric Flair was off in Japan. So I don't know. He got all upset. But, you know, I really didn't care because I guess, you know, he was kind of pissing me off a little bit with, you know, telling me that he knows. Anyway, we didn't get along. So there it is. I personally, I don't care. I don't know what to say about it. I've heard some other things now about him that, and I don't even know if it's, was he in some match where he gigged himself all up with razor blades and gigged the referee too? And is that him?
Yes, that is him. He took a golden spike and kept jabbing into the referee's head, who he claims said it was allowed it to happen, but later on you find out it's not the case. And anyway, I think he's also on house arrest. Also, I think I'm not. Don't hold me to it. But
you know, I don't. That's one of those things. I might not have been. That's not probably my finest day either. But you know.
Well, Bill, I'm going to tell you personally. I loved it, and I think a lot of other people loved it. It was good television.
Well, I'll tell you, the other side of the coin is what kind of always has, not that it's irked me like I really needed it or anything like that, but I was supposed to be paid for that. And, you know, he got all upset and cut it off, but he ran it. I never got paid.
And there you go. Just another one. Bill, I really want to thank you for taking the time out. It is truly an honor. I want to thank you as a wrestling fan first, for what you've given to the industry and to us fans. And I just want to thank you in general. So thank you, Bill, for taking the time on Long Island's number one pro wrestling broadcast.
You're welcome. It was fun. We had a good time.
Good. We'll talk soon, Bill. Thank you again.
All right. You're just going to get a hold of me later or tomorrow or something?
I'll text you right after the interview.
All right, man. See ya. Just give me a call. Nice to speak with you. Do it again anytime.
You got it. Thank you. Abe, the great Bill Irwin.
That was great.
I love him, man.
Good show back.
I got to tell you, again, WCCW guy. Psh, I love that guy.
Yeah, no, he's cool. He's got a lot of good stories.
When he came up to the WWE, I was hoping that they would do more with him, but unfortunately they didn't. But whatever. It is what it is. Yeah, I want to thank everybody for joining us. The 30 is on next, and right after that is the return of Jimmy Farrow. We'll talk to you soon.